Good evening, everyone. I'm glad to be here. Can everyone hear me? All right, fantastic. Can everyone see okay? See okay? All right, great. Anyone here a health professional? Oh, fantastic. Anyone here a physician? All right, fantastic. What's your specialty? Oh, CT surgery. Very nice. Very nice. One of my professors, interestingly, in college, was a CT surgeon. Even though he was a CT surgeon, he became a college professor because he had carpal tunnel or something like that. And someone actually had leaned on his arm the whole surgery. And he lost the ability to do surgery. So he became a college professor. Hopefully that'll never happen to you. But anyway, he was actually a very, very good teacher. I enjoyed him immensely as a professor in college. So anyone know someone with diabetes? Wow. All right, fantastic. So let's start with defining diabetes, okay? Let's start with the types of diabetes. What types of diabetes do you know about? Juvenile, I heard, or what else? Adult onset or type 2. You know, we don't use juvenile anymore. Did you know that? We don't use adult onset. We don't use juvenile anymore. And I'll give you a true story. I sound like I have sinusitis or something like that. I don't know what it is, but is it too close? Okay. Is it too close? Should I back it off a little bit? Is that better? Can everyone still hear me, though?
Yeah.
All right. Fantastic. So I'm emergency medicine, so I pick up a chart, ear pain, 6-year-old female, and I'm like, okay, probably not an emergency, right? However, as I'm heading into the room and the tech is heading out, I said, I want a blood sugar. They're like, on the 6-year-old? And I'm like, yes, I do want a blood sugar on the 6-year-old. Now, a simple ear infection in someone who has diabetes can be far from simple. Anyone ever heard of malignant otitis externa? The actual infection can penetrate into the central nervous system, go into your skull, to your brain. Any sort of infection in the diabetic can be very serious. Now, this is a 6-year-old girl, so why would I want a blood sugar on a 6-year-old girl? Now, they got the blood sugar back, and it was 235. Just so you know, any random sugar over 200 is diabetes until you prove that it's not. And the reason why I suspected that this 6-year-old had diabetes was she was 185 pounds.
Oh, my God.
Yes, true story. True story. And you think that this is something like an anomaly, but we are facing an epidemic in the United States. And by the way, we don't say juvenile, right? Because she would be juvenile, right? But what type of diabetes did she actually have? Type 2, right? Type 2. So the reason why we use type 1 and type 2 is because children are getting type 2 diabetes now. Juvenile, yes, because they are very overweight. That's correct. That's correct. Well, it certainly can complicate things. What I would describe, though, is when you look at type 1, type 2, there are different mechanisms involved in the diabetes. Type 2 diabetes is insulin resistant.
Are you going to explain the difference between type 1 and type 2?
Yes, I'm doing that right now. Yes, I'm doing that right now, even as we speak.
Okay.
Type 2 diabetes is insulin resistant, right? Your body may actually have high insulin. Did you know that? People with type 2 diabetes, especially initially, they actually have high insulin because the body is trying to compensate by producing more insulin to overcome the insulin resistance at the cellular level. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune phenomena. They believe that the body is somehow sensitized against the beta cells, the islets of Langerhans, in the pancreas. And so the body attacks itself. And once those beta cells are wiped out, what happens? Yeah, you have no insulin, right? If you have no insulin, the sugar backs up in the bloodstream, right? You produce ketones, and you have the classic symptoms of type 1 diabetes. Type 2 diabetics are traditionally overweight. Type 1 diabetics, they're losing weight, right? The classic polydipsia, polyuria, polyphagia means eating a lot, drinking a lot, peeing a lot, right? That's type 1 diabetes. And that is much less common than type 2. In fact, does anyone know what the most common form of diabetes is? It is type 2. No, that's interesting. You mentioned gestational diabetes. Gestational diabetes affects about 3 to 5% of pregnancies. And so if you have gestational diabetes, is that a big deal? Yes, it is a big deal. Particularly for who is a big deal for? The baby, yes, that's the point, right? Because the concept is that that baby sees the insulin. Does that make sense? It is actually affecting the child. And I've seen these children get gargantuan, 15 pounds, almost 20-pound babies. Unbelievable. I mean, that's going to be hard to push out, right? They're all pretty much C-sections. Because that child is seeing the insulin, it gets large. Because insulin is what kind of hormone? It's a growth hormone, right? It's one of the most powerful growth hormones in the human body. In fact, they actually use insulin as the standard of some forms of growth hormones, even naming other growth hormones. In cancers, they look at insulin-like growth hormone. Have you heard that? Insulin-like growth hormone. So insulin is a very powerful anabolic or a growth hormone. So remember that. That's going to be very important later in our talk. So insulin growth hormone, okay? These women who have gestational diabetes, is it a problem after pregnancy? It is. Because what type of diabetes is gestational diabetes like? It's like type 2, right? It's an insulin-resistant state. And the issue is that after the pregnancy, that woman is more at risk for developing type 2 diabetes. That's correct, later on in life. And those aren't the only forms of diabetes. I mean, there's Bronze diabetes, there's diabetes insipidus, there's all kinds of diabetes. But for practical purposes, over 90% of diabetes, at least in this country, it's type 2. Yes, preventable. That's interesting that you'd say that. I like that. I like the positive attitude. Now, I'm not saying every type 2 diabetic is preventable. You know, some people have diabetes as a result of something other than being overweight. In fact, in the emergency department, I can create diabetics quite frequently. You put someone on a course of steroids, their blood sugar goes up. Did you know that? Hormonally, that affects them. However, this problem with diabetes has reached epidemic proportions. Anyone know what people groups get diabetes most commonly? Sure. Well, obese. I was thinking more of maybe racial. Yeah, well, Native Americans, yes, very high. Particularly, yeah, Native Americans.
People from India are not Indians, they're Indians.
Yes, so particularly Pima, the Pima Indians are very, very susceptible to type 2 diabetes. So let's look at the definitions of diabetes. A random sugar of 200 certainly raises suspicion for diabetes, fasting of 126. But I wanted to ask, anyone here read their lab results? Who looks at their own chemistries or stuff like that? Have you noticed that the sugar is always flagged as high now? Have you noticed that? It's flagged as high even at 100. Do you know why that is? The reason why is we have found that even if your sugar is under the 126 fasting, you can have prediabetes. And that can still be affecting you. Did you know that? So they now have to flag that as high. In fact, there's some data that shows if you have a consistently high fasting sugar between 95 and 100, you have the genes for diabetes. Even 90 to 95 means you may have it on one side. So they're looking at that blood sugar very critically now. You see, the problem is that in Western medicine, for many years, we have viewed disease as a binary process, right? Either present or absent. But that's not true. That's not the way the body works. I'll give you a couple examples. If you're wanting to have a child and you are older, we do a lot more screening. Why is that? You have higher risk of genetic anomalies, right? And did anyone know what the cutoff is? What's considered advanced maternal age? It's 35, right? Now, it's not like everything was fine at 34 and then a gong rings on your 35th birthday and everything just like falls apart, right? That's not how it works. There's a gradual rise in genetic anomalies, right? It's a curve. And that is the same concept with blood sugar. And did you know that's the same concept with blood pressure as well? What is hypertension? Does anyone know what hypertension is? What's the definition of hypertension? What's the numbers? Well, 140 over 90 is the traditional number. But they're looking a lot more critically at that now. They're looking at numbers between 120 and 140, and now like 80 and 90 in the diastolic. So if you're like, let's say 130 over 85, what does that mean? You know what that means? It means you're pre-hypertensive. And you have to be aware of that. Again, it's not like you suddenly just develop kidney problems and heart problems and everything else once the blood pressure reaches 140 over 90. That's not how it works. It's not a binary process. It's a slope, right? And that's the same thing with diabetes. That's why you're getting all these flags as high on those blood tests, pre-diabetes. So what sort of symptoms might people have for diabetes? Any thoughts? Yeah, sure, but that would be more type 1 diabetes. How about type 2? How about someone with type 2 diabetes? Any symptoms they might have? What do you think? Well, it might be associated with high blood pressure, especially if the person is overweight or if they have syndrome X, right? So, sure, what else? Yes? Thirst is more classic type 1 diabetes. My point in asking this is that many times the symptoms are none. Anyone know what the silent killer is? It's not diabetes. Hypertension, right? Does something with no symptoms pose a threat to your health? Sure it does. Absolutely it does. That's why I kind of was sharing yesterday. We look at these things and say, well, you know, you have normal cholesterol. What's normal, right? What does normal mean? How do we decide what's normal, right? The concept of normal traditionally has been kind of an average of asymptomatic populations, and then you go out two standard deviations. To me, that's voodoo. That's not normal, right? Because in a society where the number one cause of death is what? Heart disease, right? You have to look very critically at what's considered a normal cholesterol level, since that level is one of the big four risk factors for heart disease, especially the high LDL, low HDL. So any signs that people might have, any physical findings they might have if they have diabetes? Any thoughts? Sure, they can have neuropathic pain, they can have neuropathies, like when people feel numbness in their extremities, that's certainly part of the workup. You can have other things that cause that, but if it's bilateral, if it's both sides, right? Loss of feeling or a paresthesia, that's what we call that, kind of a funny burning or whatever. Certainly that's something to think about. There can be deficiencies that cause that. Any other signs? Sure, you can have mental issues, especially with low blood sugar or high blood sugar, right? I know one patient, they say, "Doc, I always know when my sugar's off because I can't see." And why is that? Well, your lens is a fluid-filled structure, right? And where water goes, sugar goes, and vice versa. Where sugar goes, water goes. So they have high blood sugar levels, right? And then their lens will swell, and you can't accommodate appropriately, right? Any other signs?
Tired.
Sure, they can be fatigued. Yeah, if their blood sugar's low or high, I suppose you could certainly have that. Anything else? Well, sure, their immune system is affected, right? So any recurrent infections, right? Have you ever seen people with these dark areas in their armpits? That's called acanthosis nigrans. That can be a sign of diabetes, not always. One of the things I wanted to share is that when you look at people who have diabetes, up to 90% of them in some series have undiagnosed kidney disease. So this is important to get a grasp on, because what you don't want is to have the disease kind of churning away, destroying your kidneys, destroying your nerves, destroying other organs, right, without being treated appropriately. So here are some consequences. What is the number one cause of death of diabetics? Anyone know? Heart attack, it is. How'd you know that? Very good. Diabetics are up to 10 times more likely to have a fatal heart attack as someone without diabetes. That's serious consequences. And here's the difficulty I can share with you as a physician. When people are diabetic, they often don't present with chest pain. It's frightening. I have seen people come in with nausea and have full-blown heart attacks. Weakness, dizziness, back pain, fatigue, as someone mentioned. Well, the problem is that the diabetes doesn't just affect the nerves in your feet. It may affect the nerves where you're feeling your heart or not. Very serious. Well, it's not the entire spinal column generally. It's usually peripheral nerves. But what I'm saying is that diabetics have neuropathy. They have nerve damage. And they often don't feel things the same. They're at increased risk of heart attack, but they don't often present classically. Very serious. Very, very serious. Any other things that diabetes is the number one cause of? Not just death, but comorbidities. What else? Amputations? Actually, amputations might be peripheral vascular disease. That's maybe up to debate, but that's certainly a complication of diabetes, yeah. Is amputations. Blindness. Why do they get blindness? Diabetic retinopathy, right? Retinopathy. So what happens is you're body starts producing these real fragile blood vessels. And the reason why the ophthalmologist wants to get at those quick is why? What's the problem? They bleed and they create a scar. And the problem is you can't see through a scar. Does that make sense? Can't see through a scar. So diabetic retinopathy, some people argue that macular degeneration would be a more common cause of blindness, but I think it actually is diabetic retinopathy. In the third world, might be river blindness, but I'd say diabetes is certainly up there in the relevant areas that we're talking about. Any other number one causes? Yes, renal failure. Some people say hypertension. I believe it's diabetes. If you look really closely at the numbers. And is dialysis a great way to live?
No.
No, right? Whether it's formal dialysis or peritoneal dialysis, no fun, right? Any other number one causes? I'll tell you a true story. There was a drug that was initially utilized for high blood pressure. It was in the cardiology department. And it really wasn't that great. It was very volatile. It was up and down. And, you know, the drug company said, we're just going to scrap it, right? We're just going to cancel it and recall the drug, right? When you recall the drug, you got to get the drug back from people, right? Or somehow get them to get rid of it. But they had a hard time getting people to give back the drug. They wouldn't return their calls, all this stuff. And they're like, listen, you were in this trial, and we're going to scrap this drug because it's not good. And they finally interviewed these people, and they said, listen, just level with us. What are you doing? And they said, well, we actually like the side effects. Even though, yeah, it's not great for our blood pressure, we like the side effects. So they took this drug, and they removed it from the cardiology department and transferred it to another department. And then they began some clinical trials in a different branch of medicine. And I watched the residents and attendings and everyone associated with this department selling their homes, cashing out their 401ks, taking on debt like no tomorrow. And I said, what are you guys doing? You'll find out. And they accumulated as much debt as possible, and they took all of that money and they put everything into Pfizer. And in 1 month, they made 700% on their investment.
Oh, baby.
What was the drug? Viagra. Yes. Diabetes, number one cause of erectile dysfunction. Maybe it doesn't kill you, but certainly that affects your life, doesn't it? Yes, it does. And so diabetes doesn't just cause premature death. Up to 10 years off your life, by the way, even if you control the diabetes perfectly. And many people do not, especially type 1 diabetics. You know, the teenager is kind of rebellious. They don't take their insulin. I know some people who come into our ER every month in DKA over and over and over again because they won't take their insulin, you know, and they don't want to pump. So if you consider us as just regular people, we have normal cells or normal, right? Is it possible that we could create a semi-diabetic state in our cells? Right? We talked about the immune system. Diabetes affects the immune system. Normally, white blood cells can eradicate a number of bacteria, but in an uncontrolled diabetic, they have decreased function, decreased killing capacity. That's very serious, especially when you can't feel stuff, right? When you guys go on a hike, you get a rock in your shoe, what do? Right? You get the rock out of your shoe. When you're diabetic, you might find the rock embedded in your foot a week later, to the bone, infected. I've seen people come in like that. They're like, yeah, I just found this rock in my shoe. Well, the rock had been there for a while, right? They just didn't feel it. That's the problem. So when you consider the immune effects of diabetes, have you ever noticed if you eat like something really, really bad for you? Like, let's say you have a big banana split. Over the next few days, what do you get? Well, you get fat. That's great. You get sick, right? Have you noticed that? One of the things to consider is when you have a big bolus of fat and refined carbs, even though your insulin and your pancreas is normal, it doesn't instantly drop your sugar. Does that make sense? You have high blood sugar levels for a time. It doesn't do it immediately. So you may be a transient diabetic by your lifestyle. So, what is the cause of diabetes, type 2 diabetes? It is what? I hear sugar,
carbohydrate,
lifestyle. Okay. This is a very old study. James Anderson, University of Kentucky, he wanted to see what was the cause of type 2 diabetes. So he took healthy volunteers and he fed them a pound of refined sugar every day. That's pretty bad, huh? How could you choke it down? It's actually pretty easy. Anyone know how much sugar's in soda? Like, there's like 12 cubes of sugar in that can of Coke. That's crazy. There's an easy way to get that much sugar. So he tried and tried and fed them all this refined sugar, and they could not get them to spill in the urine, to have abnormal glucose tolerance tests or abnormal hemoglobin A1Cs. Then he placed them on a 60% fat diet. To give you an idea, the standard SAD, standard American diet, the rich sort of American diet, it's up to 42% fat. So this is even higher than that. And in 2 weeks, all the healthy subjects had some abnormality. Sugar in the urine, glucose tolerance impairment, hemoglobin A1C, not necessarily, because that's usually an average over 90 days. But how does this work? Now, this is not an exact explanation. For those of you who are the health professionals, physicians, nurses, whatnot, you can look up post-receptor defect model of insulin resistance. You can look that up. When you have a cell and you want to get sugar in the cell, okay? That sugar utilizes insulin as kind of a key, okay? The cell needs sugar, insulin binds, glucose binds, and it opens up, and the sugar comes in, okay? That's a simplistic model. There's obviously other things that happen too, potassium, hydrogen, there's an exchange of those back and forth, okay? But there's other things that happen, but ultimately just keep in mind that the sugar has to go into the cell with insulin. Insulin is kind of the key, the mediator that puts it in the cell, okay? Now imagine, if you will, that the cell gets too full, okay? Too full. What's the storage molecule for excess calories in our body? It's not sugar. What is the principal storage molecule? Fat, right? So let's say this cell gets full of fat, okay? It's getting full of fat. Let's say these are fat globules, okay? That fat can impair the insulin. It kind of, if you would say, it gums up the locks, okay? Or the cell is too full. It's like, I have too much in here already. So what happens is that the receptors for insulin become less responsive, or there's less of them, okay? So if they're less responsive or less of them, how is the body going to get the sugar to go in the cell? What's it got to do? Produce more what? Insulin, right? So it produces a lot more insulin, right? That's why type 2 diabetics are actually high insulin states in general. And you can force more, so to speak, sugar into the cells. So that's the concept. What do you think might be a better idea, though? If the cell is too full or blocked by fat, what might be another approach? Get rid of the fat. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that is the misconception. There are people who are diabetics, and they say, oh, don't give me an apple. You'll kill me. That's all carbs. Is the apple going to hurt them? I would challenge you, okay? I'm going to challenge you right now. And you can check it out if you'd like. You can try it. If you have type 2 diabetes, or if you know someone with type 2 diabetes, and again, of course, have them work with their doctor, have them check their sugars more frequently. They can check it 3 times a day. They can check it 6 times a day. They can check it 9 times a day, okay? put them on water and apples. According to conventional wisdom, they should die, right? I mean, right? It's pure carbs. They should die. But they won't die. I promise you they won't die. If they get raw, fresh, good quality apples, not apple juice, not applesauce. I'm talking about apples, right? When you look at the insulin curve on an apple, applesauce and apple juice, same calories, do you think they have different curves? They absolutely do. Why? Not just the sugar, what is it? The fiber. The fiber, yes. So you put them on apples, but make sure they at least eat 10 apples a day, okay? Because I am a big advocate of eating enough calories. I never tell people starve themselves to lose weight. Keep your calories above 1,000, minimum, or more. So they're eating 3-4 apples every meal and water in between. And let them check their sugar. Do it for just 3 days. I promise you they will become less insulin resistant. I promise you. And I do not, full disclosure, I do not get any kickbacks from the Apple Growers Association of America. I'm not even paid to speak at all. I do this because I like to share. I like to help people. The apple is not your enemy. It is the fat in your diet and on the spare tire that is hurting you. That is what is hurting you in type 2 diabetes. Not all, but most. So how do we typically treat diabetes? We don't treat it, I think, in the most effective way. But what's the most common treatment for diabetes? Insulin, right? It's not necessarily just insulin, but if you're going to use a hormone, if you're going to use, like if you're a gestational diabetic, yeah, they would be insulin. However, consider this for a minute. If you are treating someone with insulin, right? Imagine this, if you will. Okay, I'm going to place you on insulin. Go see the diabetic teaching individual and come back in 2 weeks. So you put them on some insulin. You teach them how to give themselves shots. You teach them the ADA diet, right? And after 2 weeks, they come back and they've gained 3 pounds. Oh, wait a minute. If you gain some more weight, I don't know what it is, doc. I've been trying to exercise. Well, I'm going to have to up your insulin, okay? Come back in 2 weeks again. They've gained 5 pounds. And the insulin is increased again. Why would you say it becomes more difficult for them to lose weight? At this point, they're saying, doc, I just smell food now and I'm putting on weight. Wait a minute, what kind of hormone is insulin? Oh, no. Oh, no. Could it be that we are somehow frustrating our own efforts? Now, I'm not saying that insulin's evil. I use insulin all the time. In fact, not only do I give people insulin, I'm writing for insulin drips on people. They come in with sugars 500, 800. I've seen up to 3,000. Insanity. That wasn't DK, that's HHNK. Actually, that's a type 2 diabetic. But the concept is I'm writing boluses of insulin and an insulin drip to get them out of this. But have you ever heard someone say, hey, my doctor upped my insulin and my diabetes is cured? No. No. Is insulin necessary? Sure. But it does not cure the diabetes. Period. Right? How many of you wear glasses? Raise your hand. If I were to say, you know, my doctor changed my prescription and I'm no longer myopic. I'm no longer nearsighted. Is that the truth? You don't have the symptoms while you're wearing the glasses. Does that make sense? Do you understand the analogy? You haven't suddenly cured your nearsightedness. You're just managing the symptoms. And I have glasses too, by the way. I'm not saying they're evil. I actually don't need them. I'm 20-30, actually, so it's not that bad. It's actually gotten better in the last few years. Some people say, you're getting presbyopic, that's why. But that's another lecture. So when you look at insulin's effects on the body, insulin has more effects than just gaining weight. Anyone else know what insulin's effects are? It does regulate your blood sugar. Anything else it affects, particularly in your arteries. It actually, insulin just by itself is atherogenic. Did you know that? It accelerates atherosclerosis. That is why if you are a diabetic, you want to be on a lower dose of insulin as long as it's managed well. You don't want to use, you know, I have people who come in and say, hey, doc, I had my birthday, so I just added, you know, an extra dose of insulin. Is that good? Well, I can not eat whatever I want. Just cover it with some more insulin. No, don't do that. Don't do that. Insulin is very important to your health, but you don't want to just load up on insulin. You know, I see some of these people that are type 2 diabetics on over 100 units of insulin a day. Did you know that? You think that's good? Accelerated atherosclerosis leads to what? What's the number one cause of death in diabetics? Heart disease, right? Consider this. Anyone heard of glipizide or gliburide? Glipizide, gliburide? They're sulfonylureas. They're drugs that are commonly used to treat type 2 diabetes. Anyone know how they work? Well, they stimulate the pancreas to produce more insulin. It can be dangerous. Why?
I don't know.
Well, here's why it's dangerous. This is a classic call that I get. I'll get a call from the paramedics. They say, we got a refusal. It's America, right? You can go or not if they call 911. I got a guy here. His sugar was 20 when we got here. We gave him an AMPA D50. He's eating a meal now. He wants to refuse transport. You know what I always ask them? What is he on for his diabetes? Oh, I don't know. Can you check? And if they're on a sulfonylurea, do you know what I say? Bring them in. Do you know why I say that? Well, it's because even though the studies were done on talazamide, which is the first generation sulfonylurea, it would stand to reason that the effects go for the others, is they have very long half-lives. Do you understand what that means? It takes a long time for the body to process the med and get rid of it. So if their, let's say their kidney function was down, right? And that's why they got a little extra glipizide hanging around. It's going to keep hanging around. That's the problem. They'll continue. I've had to put people on glucose drips because they keep dropping and dropping and dropping and dropping on the sulfonylurea. Anyone ever look at the drug inserts? Other meds, the little, it's like this thing that's like this big, but then you unfold it, it's like a poster for the wall, right? If you ever have insomnia, those are the absolute cure for insomnia. I promise you, you just read that after about 20 minutes, right? However, on sulfonylureas, you will find a black box on the insert. Does anyone know what that black box says? Well, black boxes have to do with, yes, death, somehow, some mortality or morbidity. Do you know what it will say on the sulfonylureas? And you can look this up yourself if you want. It says that although the studies were originally done on talazamide, which is the first generation sulfonylurea, that all of them would theoretically significantly increase risk of MI, heart attack. True. Take a look. Now, someone remind me what the number one cause of death of diabetics was? Wait a minute. Hold on. Wait a minute. So you're telling me that one of the treatments is atherogenic and the other one has a black box warning for MI? Now, I'm not saying they're evil, but what I'm saying is they're not the cure. Does that make sense? They manage the diabetes, but they do not cure it. Is there a better way? Is there a safer way to defeat diabetes? We will go to what is perhaps the oldest controlled trial known to man. This trial was performed at the University of Babylon. I'm not kidding, I'm serious. The University of Babylon on the plains of Dura. The experimental group was Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The control group, the rest of the kids from Judah, right? The intervention, Daniel 1:12, prove your servants 10 days. Length of time, 10 days. Do you think 10 days can actually change your health? Absolutely it can. And let them give us pulse, right? Is this pulse? Is that what they gave them? No. A plant-based diet. That's the translation. And what did they drink? Water. Water. Interesting, isn't it? So Daniel and his three friends go vegan for 10 days. When they could have anything they want, right? They've got an open ticket, a blank check. The most powerful monarch in the known world. And they choose to go vegan? Where in the world did they get that idea from? Well, let's take a look at the results. Verse 15, at the end of 10 days, their appearance was fairer and healthier than all the children which should eat the portion of the king's food and the wine that he drank. So after 10 days, hey, I'm convinced. So the follow-up at 3 years, in all matters of wisdom and understanding, he found them to be how many times better? 10 times better. Do you think your lifestyle affects your mind? Sure it does. Sure it does. So let's think about this. Where did he get this idea? What religion was Daniel? He was Jewish, right? So where would he have gotten this idea to go vegan? From the Pentateuch, right? Genesis 1:29 and 3:18 gives the original diet for mankind, right? What was that diet? Right? It was vegan. Fruits, nuts, grains, beans. And after sin, what was added? Not meat. Everyone says meat. It's vegetables. Meat was added after the flood. You put a mile of water on the face of the earth and everything's going to be destroyed. So you got to eat something, right? So think about this for a minute. Did Daniel have to go vegan? He was Jewish, right? Could he have not said, hey, give me the kosher meats? Could he not? Or, hey, I need you to prepare these meats in a different way now. Could he not have done that? Could he not have gone pescatarian or lacto-ovo? Yes, he could have. Could he say, hey, give me some milk to drink or pop to drink or whatever to drink? Could he not? Yes. But he didn't. He went vegan and he drank water. Wow. I find that profound. If you desire true healing and cure, you will not aim at the minimum. You will aim at the maximum. This is a very funny sort of statement here. John chapter 5, verse 6, Jesus finds himself at the pool of Bethesda. Anyone been to Bethesda? There's a Bethesda, Maryland, right? That's what it's named after. It's true. So he comes to this guy who's paralyzed, right? And he asks him a very funny question. The guy's been paralyzed for 38 years. He says, do you want to get well? No, I'm getting a suntan. Yes, that's why I'm here at the pool. I want to get well. But it's not enough to come to the pool. You have to make a decision. And God himself cannot make that decision for you. You must choose to be well. You must desire healing enough to change. Does that make sense? And that choice is up to you. Though God himself were to show up to you and say, listen, I'm willing to heal you, he's still going to ask you, is this what you want? And how you display your desire is your choice. Does that make sense? True story. My grandmother, Chef, was a diabetic. Tony would cover himself with his sliding scale. Sliding scale, right? He'd check his blood sugar. If it was high, what would he do? Take some insulin, right? The higher it was, the more insulin. I saw him doing that, and one day I said, Tony, don't take your insulin. He's like, what? Your doctor telling me not to take my insulin? I said, I didn't say forever don't take your insulin. Just for now. Here's what I'd like you to do. Instead of taking your insulin, take this liter of water and take a break. Go walk as fast as you can up the hill outside my house, okay? And walk for an hour. He's like, but I gotta feed grandma. I said, I'll feed my grandma. And he took off. And he drank and drank and walked and walked. And he came back and he checked his sugar again. And what happened? It went down. And I told him, every time your sugar is high and you're going to cover on the sliding scale, exercise for an hour and drink as much water as you can. And in 5 months, he was off all his insulin. His doctor said, she's like, I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it. You've lost 20 pounds in 5 months, and you're off all of your insulin. He got off everything, even his metformin, his glyburide, everything. Now, the additional bonus was he was at my house, so he was eating vegan because he'd make it for grandma, and I'd say, hey, you're welcome to eat it too, right? He was able to completely reverse his diabetes in a matter of months. Now, has Daniel's diet been looked at for diabetes? Yes, it has. Anyone know who Neil Barnard is? Neil Barnard is the president of the Physicians Committee on Responsible Medicine, right? He put the vegan diet head-to-head versus the American Diabetic Association diet. That's considered the gold standard, right? What I liked about this study is that they did not provide the food. You had to make it yourself. The reason why I like that is because that's the real world, right? If I had somebody making me vegan 3 times a day, hey, I could be vegan no problem, right? Right? If I had, a little free ticket to Ron and Edel's house three times a day, I could eat that way, no problem, right? But when you got to make it for yourself, that's a different story, right? So they taught them how to do the ADA diet. They taught them how to make vegan food, right? And at the end of just 22 weeks, all of them had reduced their medications. But the vegan group, almost half of them had cut their meds. The vegan group had lost 14 pounds versus 6 pounds for the ADA. LDL cholesterol, and this is actually what I'm most excited about. The LDL cholesterol dropped 21% in the vegan group. Now, why am I excited about that for the diabetics? Yes, it lowers their risk of heart attack, heart disease, right? This drop represents almost a 50% drop in their risk of heart disease. It's a 2 to 3% drop per number of LDL, or roughly per percent. There was better glycemic control in the vegan group. And the funny thing was, is the vegan group had no limit on carbs, calories, or portion sizes. Isn't that crazy? In the ADA group, like, okay, this is a portion, this is that, okay, this is an exchange, this is whatever, right? It was more complicated, and the funny thing was, is that the vegan group actually increased their carbs, and when you look at the study, it was by 200 calories per day. That's 50 grams of extra carbs. You'd think it'd be worse, though, right, with the extra carbs? No. It's not the carbs. It's the kind of carbs, right? There's good carbs and bad carbs. If you're eating whole plant foods, you will not harm the diabetic. Even if it's whole fruit, you will not harm the diabetic. Again, if you doubt me, check your sugar 9 times a day. Check your sugar 20 times a day. It's fine. What I would like to share in closing is, yes, ultimately, you're going to have to exercise. If you have diabetes, if you know someone with diabetes, there is no shortcut around it. They're going to have to do what I told Tony to do. They're going to have to exercise. However, here's a couple secrets on how to lose weight without changing your diet and without exercising. And it's not that I'm selling you like Garcinia Cambogia or some weird thing, you know what I mean? I don't sell anything at these seminars. These are just simple little tricks you can use. Who remembers the sumo lifestyle? Who remembers that from yesterday? What meal did they skip? When did they eat their biggest meal? We are the sumo nation. It's true, right? What do we typically skip? Breakfast. Or we'll like grab a coffee and a donut, or right? And when do we eat our biggest meal? At night. That doesn't make any sense, does it? If you look at a metabolic curve, right? When you're sleeping, where do you think your metabolism is? Down, right? It's your basal metabolic rate. Then you wake up, right? And then around 3, it takes a little dip. And at night, what do you think happens? Right? Just looking at this curve, where should you eat most of your calories? Breakfast, lunch, or dinner? Right? What kind of workout are you going to do here? Right? You're doing like this. 1, 2, 3, right? That, you don't need those calories. Those calories, once they're absorbed, are going to go to the spare tire, right? People say, well, I skip breakfast because I want to lose weight. Does that work? No. You know why it doesn't work? Is that people who skip breakfast versus people who eat it, 25% different metabolism over the whole day. Because the thing is, if you skip breakfast, right, what does your body think is happening? Right? And so what it does is it turns down the idling RPM, if I could say that, or turns down the thermostat. Does that make sense? Don't skip breakfast. Do you know that 25% increased burned calories over an average person's diet? That's like 500 extra calories. Unless you're eating like bacon and eggs and sausage and deep fried hash browns and goodness, whatever, it's going to be really hard to put on weight at breakfast. Does that make sense? But at night, oh yes. Think about this. Who knows who Dr. Atkins was? Dr. Atkins. Who knows how he died? He actually fell. That was the concept. He actually fell. But if you want to research this, there's a little bit of question about why he fell. So anyway, I will leave that to your own research. But we'll say that the person who was declaring the death and the death certificate, they actually had some sort of legal action from the family. So, and it was changed. But anyway, I'm not going to get into that. That's a different presentation. But Dr. Atkins had a very interesting concept with his diet. Dr. Atkins looked at a concept called the thermic effect of food. Anyone know what the thermic effect of food is? Anyone? Okay, I'll show you. When you look at calories, okay? Calories come from three principal sources. What are those three sources? Yes, carbs, fat, and protein, right? I mean, alcohol too. Did you know that? Alcohol has calories. So, your body cannot take food and perfectly translate it to fat. Like if you eat too many calories, what does the body turn it into? Fat, right? I mean, after you've stored your glycogen and all this other stuff, I'm not going to get into all that, right? But it turns it to fat. So which of these four things do you think is the easiest to turn to fat? Yes, right? Thank you. So if you eat 100 extra calories of fat, the body has to spend 3 of those calories to turn it into fat on you. Does that make sense? That's the thermic effect of food. So what does 100 calories of fat look like? Can someone give me an example? Sure. So when you butter your bread, is it easy to go like a little extra? Pretty easy, right? Extra 100 calories, easy to do. But you only lose 3 of those calories. What does 100 calories of carbs look like? Anyone tell me? An apple, sure, or a slice of bread, right? So is that harder to overeat? A little bit harder. Does that make sense? How many calories do you think that your body has to spend to turn carbs into what's the storage molecule? Fat, right? Do you think that's easier or harder than fat? It's harder, right? Okay, what do you think it is? How many calories do we lose? It's actually 21, right? So that gives you 79, right? Protein, 100 extra calories of protein. What does that look like? What? Sorry? 27? Did I get that wrong? 79. Oh, 27. Are you guessing for the protein? Already? Wow. You're like the A student. Did you know that sitting in front is correlated to academic success? No, I'm serious. Better than most other parameters, right? Sitting in the front. Doesn't make you smarter? Well, you're kind of in the front, right? I mean, so what does an extra 100 calories of protein look like? Give me a practical visual. Some beans? Like half a cup of beans or? Yeah. So do you think that's easy to overeat on, the extra helping of beans or whatever? Probably not as easy as this, right? But did you know the body has to spend 31 of those calories to turn it into fat? One of the reasons why is the body can't store nitrogen, right? What it does with nitrogen is it turns into ammonia and ultimately urea. It has to run a cycle called the ornithine cycle. Anyone heard of the Krebs cycle? Right, that's for carbs, right? But that's what it has to do. Beta oxidation is for fat. So you end up with only 69 calories. Ethanol actually has 7 calories per gram. So it's similar to fat. Carbs have 4.1 calories per gram, this is 4.1, fat is 9.5, and alcohol is 7 calories per gram. So alcohol is kind of like fat, right? That's why there's the beer belly, right? So when Dr. Atkins looked at that, what do you think he zeroed in on? Sure, protein. The other bonus with protein, if you drop the carbs, you cannot process fat. Does that make sense? So I'll give you an idea. To burn fat, let's say this is a big fat globule, okay? Fat must burn in the flame of carbohydrates, if I could explain it that way, okay? Fat must burn in the flame of carbohydrates. So you need a little bit of carbs to process your fats. And if you look at, those are your health professionals, if you want to look at beta oxidation, you need the input of carbs to burn the fats. If you drop your carbs too low, you take these fats and instead of processing them, you turn them into acids called ketones. Right? The people on the Atkins diet, they're like dipping their urine. You know why? They want to make sure they're not like shutting down, you know, going into too much ketosis, as we call. But did you know that type 1 diabetic is doing the same? They are producing ketones. That's why they lose weight. Does that make sense? They have polyphagia, polyuria, polydipsia. They're creating ketones. They're not processing the fats properly, right? They're producing acids, acetoacetate, beta-hydroxybutyrate, right? And that is the concept. If you knock out fat as a component, do you think you're going to lose weight? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But do you think it's good for people to lose weight because they go into diabetic coma? Probably not, right? So the balance is with the Atkins diet, right, is you want to drop the carbs real low, but not so low that you become really acidotic. Does that make sense? Does the Atkins diet work? Yes, it works. Yes, it does. But is it the healthiest way? I don't think so. I think we're going to see a lot of people in the next generation to come with renal failure. That's my personal opinion. Finally, Dr. Art Uhlein. Dr. Art Uhlein, I don't know why this just went off, but it just did. Okay. Thankfully, there's not many slides in this one. Dr. Art Uhlein did an interesting experiment on an old wives' tale. Do you remember your mom telling you as a kid, now you gotta chew your food 30 times, right? And you remember your mom saying that? So he examined that. What he did is he examined people and he told them, eat as much as you want until you're full. I'm just gonna video you and see how many calories you consume, okay? And then he found out how many calories they were taking, and the people served as their own controls, okay? They served as their own controls. The intervention was not 30 chews, but 30 seconds. I don't like this. It's a little bit too cloudy. 30 seconds per bite, okay? 30 seconds between bites. That's all they had to do. And they had to use a small utensil. So if you used a dinner fork, you had to use a salad fork. If you used like a tablespoon, you had to use a soup, a little like teaspoon, right? Does that make sense? Dessert fork. How many people can use chopsticks proficiently? Raise your hand. How many people cannot use chopsticks very proficiently? All of you will be given chopsticks. So smaller utensil or non-functioning utensil or less functioning utensil. Because it's going to do what? It's going to slow you down, right? He allowed them to eat as much as they wanted until they were satisfied, videoed them again. Do you think they ate more, less, or the same? How much less? Try half. Now, I'm not saying all of you will do that, but this is just kind of a social-like experiment. How many of you have gone to, like, your favorite restaurant and overate a little bit? Anyone want to be honest? Okay, all right. Thank you for your honesty. But when you were eating and eating, and you said, oh, okay, I'm full, right? 30 minutes later, how did you feel? I'm, like, okay, it's like here, you know? You felt worse, didn't you? It's not that you continued eating after that 30 minutes, but your hypothalamus caught up with you. Does that make sense? the area in the brain for satiety. And it's fairly complex. It has to do with leptin and all kinds of other stuff. But it's delayed a little bit. That's why you shouldn't wolf your food down. But you should take time. Chew it. Enjoy it, right? You don't enjoy it in your stomach. You enjoy it in your mouth. And you'll find that you will eat a more appropriate amount. None of those things change your lifestyle. I feel significantly. You're eating most of your food in the morning. You're eating more of your calories from what? What two categories should you eat more from? Protein and carbs, right? But we talked about the monounsaturated fats yesterday. Do you remember? What do those do with abdominal fat? The rhesus monkey study, remember that? They shunt the fat away from your midsection. Does it matter where your fat's distributed? Oh, yes. From not just a cosmetic standpoint, but a health standpoint. So I believe that ultimately you're going to have to exercise. I'm sorry to have to break that to you. But the cause of diabetes is fat in your diet and on you. Certainly, refined carbs aren't going to help you because refined carbs are turned into fat, right? Yeah. But ultimately, I believe that every one of us can put some of these things into practice. I'm going to give you a bonus one, okay? I'm going to give you a bonus one. This is the simple apple diet, not the apple fast that I gave you for 3 days. All you have to do is eat one whole fresh apple before every meal. That's it. End of story. Now, why would that cause you to lose weight? I'm adding something to your diet. You'd think you'd gain weight, right? How do you think that works? Yeah, you're eating the apple first, so it fills you up. So you don't eat too much of the probably not as good for you stuff that you're going to eat after that. Does that make sense? The reason why I choose the apple and not a salad is because you don't put ranch dressing on the apple. Well, maybe some people do, right? But they're like, yeah, I'm eating a salad before every meal. And I'm just like really blowing up here. But it's like when I look at the proportion, I said, would you like a little salad with the ranch dressing? You know, so that's the problem. That's why I say the apple instead of a salad. Yes, I'll take questions in just a second. Yes. So my appeal to each of you is if you know someone who has diabetes, or if you have diabetes yourself, please work with your doctor. But please understand that half of the cure is understanding the cause. And half of your success is going to be your commitment. Do you truly desire to be well? And even if your desire is like this much, that's a start. We had one guy that came to one of these health seminars. One of my colleagues was putting it on. He didn't do anything. He didn't change his diet, didn't change his exercise, didn't do anything. He just changed his beverage choice. He quit drinking Mountain Dew. That was it. That's all he did. And in a year, he lost 40 pounds because he was a truck driver, and that's what he was drinking on all of his routes. He exchanged it for water. Small changes over a long period of time give you success. Well, I'm glad that you're not drinking as much pop. That's great. But make sure you drink water. But I believe that if you make small changes over long periods of time, you will have success. And my prayer for each one of you is that you would not only enjoy greater health, but clearer minds, more balanced emotions, and a stronger spirit. Thank you very much.